Welcome to the Future Strategist, and I'm back today with Greg Cochran. Greg, how are you doing?
All right.
So today, Greg and I thought we would talk about self-replicating probes in space that could maybe take over our solar system for good, for the good of humanity, or perhaps it could go wrong and it could kill us all.
Yeah, so, everything has risks.
Yeah, everything. Some has a little bit more, but, you know. So the idea of this, you know, if you listen to this, you've seen this in science fiction. You create some kind of machine in space and it goes to an asteroid and creates a copy of itself. And then the copy can create copies and this grows exponentially. So you start out with a few of these machines in the asteroid belt and eventually maybe they're taking apart Mercury. How science fiction-y is this? How likely could we do it in the next decade if we care to?
I think it's fairly feasible. I'm not sure as to the exact time frame, but I don't think it's an enormously long time if we made a serious effort, which we certainly have not.
Okay. So, well, we are making a serious effort through Elon Musk of putting things in space and getting better at that.
True, but that doesn't matter very much for this. I mean, one of the things about anything of this sort is it's going to be small, because you want it to be small because so it'll have a quick replication time. A quick replication time, a short replication time, is terribly important. If you have that, you have one that can replicate twice as fast, it utterly dominates any other one. Because you end up with enormously more of them. And since you only need to put one of them, or let's say because you're worried about accidentally ruining it, let's say two or three, when you send them off to the asteroids, you could, I mean, things like these, you know, the Musk rockets, which are considerably cheaper, in putting things to lower, but I think they've dropped the price by at least half, I think somewhat more. They won't hurt, but they're not crucial, not for this project. They are for all sorts of ordinary projects. But here, if you put one successfully, and again, they're not very big, we could have used rockets we had in the 60s.
Okay. So now on Earth, of course, we have self-replicating machines. Those are cells, and you know, biology has a huge amount of that. Nature's given us that, but we haven't figured out, or no one's tried to make self-replicating machines on Earth. If we put aside the problem of getting to the asteroid belt, would it be harder or easier to create something that can self-replicate in space versus Earth? Again, ignoring the getting there part.
Well, there's advantages and disadvantages. You know, you have to design for situations that aren't quite as accessible, that you're not, I mean, we're somewhat, like, we know a lot about vacuum effects. Okay. You know, we put a lot of satellites up. We know something about what, for example, the asteroids are made of. In fact, we got a sample just recently. Mm-hmm. But the key thing is, as I said, the smaller it is, the better it is. Because it, you know, in principle, you can probably have but it's not just small. It's like, it means built lightly. Okay. So, like if you wanted to build something that works on the Earth, it has to be strong enough to not have gravity collapse it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now you can make something that is more ethereal, more spider looking if you build it on the moon, because gravity is 1/6 on the typical asteroid, where the gravity is like less than 1/100th of Earth. You could build something that is extremely flimsy, that basically the materials you have to prepare for it, the key one is the solar cells, okay? And you could build those solar cells very thin enough that they absorb most of the light, but they don't need a lot of structural strength. And that means that the weight of the thing compared to its solar cells is much smaller than one you would build on Earth or the moon.
So I think that's a really critical point, that, you know, they'll have vastly less gravity. So that means that's going to make it much easier to build structures. And of course, you don't have to worry about weather or wind or something knocking it down or lightning. That's obviously.
Oh, I mean, there are all sorts of chemical processes and stuff that the ones we're familiar with certainly would be hard to do exactly the same thing in the asteroid belt. Look, a lot of our chemical processes use water. And although you can probably get some, in the rock, it's certainly not as easily available as it is on Earth. But yeah, but the key thing about an asteroid for this is it has a mix of elements. It's not necessarily, what we would call a high grade ore for all the things we want, but we don't absolutely need that. We just need to be able to get the key components and in sufficient quantity and have enough light to, to run our solar cells to drive this. If I were getting started on this, what I would really start with are some Earth crossing asteroids. The reason is they get more sunlight. I mean, so the sun, the power of sunlight in the asteroid belt is like what, more than 10 times weaker per square inch per square meter than and this Earth crossing one's actually getting closer to the sun. And and there's some that are moderately big, a cubic mile or something. And that's how I would start. But then I would do the after I had consumed all of those Earth crossing closer in asteroids, I would use the asteroids in the asteroid belt.
Okay. So how big do you envision this to be?
Oh, smaller than a person, probably. I
Okay,
hope,
but
hopefully, a lot smaller.
okay. And this all by itself, the structure could capture energy from the sun and then mine stuff on these asteroids and then assemble them, process the material. And then assemble the material into something like itself.
Yes. One of the things, one of the things about this is, since at some point we have to be building something like an electronic brain, something like chips, something like a
Yeah.
modern computer. I mean, if we have a program that has success, we also have to write the program. It's like we're not just designing an ant that could live in space. We're designing, the program, the behavior that allows it to do those things. And hopefully also this somewhere in that program is included something that says do what we say.
Well.
But it yeah, I mean, you have to but the duplicating the program, which I mean it says we have to duplicate, the brain of the thing, but we know how to do that. We do that all the time, just copying a program into a new computer. That's
Okay, but
something we know how to do.
the factories that build computer chips are giant. They're much bigger than a person. So how
And
is this going to
they're getting worse,
possible?
and they're getting more harder to build all the time. We would probably have to have something at least at first that has it's not it does not produce, I think, what we would call a cutting edge 3 nanometer feature chip, as using super UV lasers we get from blasting little drops of tin. No, I don't want to. That's too hard. I mean, it's almost too hard. I mean, I'm amazed anybody could make it work at all. But there are other possible approaches that, they may not have, they may not be the right approaches for TSMC or Intel, but they might be for us. So at least people, I need to check how much people still do this, but there used to be procedures in which you would make a test chip instead of, like with lithography, we expose something and make a pattern repeatedly to build up a chip. But there is another way which used to be used occasionally, which was we'd use an electron gun or an ion gun to write a pattern. And the point is, if you have the right program controlling the electron gun, you could write whatever pattern you need.
And how big is an electron gun?
Well, it doesn't have to be real big. I mean, you have an electron gun and an old TV set. I mean, a kind of electron gun. I don't think it has to be real big. but this is not something I know detailed answers to. Some people may have thought about this harder than me. You know, there are, now, by the way, this whole class of thing is probably what you would call a clanking replicator. I'm not assuming that we can build something on a molecular scale, which, by the way, is what happens with Earth life. I mean, so for example, I could have a pond and I could put a single green algae cell, you know, which is a small little thing, okay, although you can see it with a light microscope, and it could end up covering the pond after a year.
Yeah, and I think that's really important to people who dismiss this as absurd. I mean, nature figured out how to do this, and you're right, you literally could get a tiny little cell that could take over a pond on Earth.
Given more time, it could cover bigger. If you had a, suppose you had a habitable but uninhabited planet, it could cover a sea. I mean, if, you know, assuming there was nothing there before. But one of the problems which we have run into before is when you're talking about things that, although the logic of how they work is perfectly easy to explain, and there may even have been some examples of it, if the argument says this thing ends up having a huge effect, a lot of people dismiss it purely because they'll say, well, nothing could, that couldn't really happen. You know, like a few people talking about some new bug in China, you know, that couldn't really disrupt everything.
Yeah,
it just couldn't.
People don't get exponential growth.
But don't you remember all the articles people wrote saying, yeah, that can't really happen, we should really worry about the flu and so forth? Yeah. Well, but there's a simple reason. They're idiots. But a particular kind of idiot. What
could happen? We haven't quite got there yet. So we create something that makes copies of itself. We put it out in space, and it, you know, there's a lot of material out in space, and if it grows exponentially, it could, over a relatively short period of time, there could be trillions of them. They could have more mass than the entire industrial structure of everything on Earth.
Well, yeah, I mean, certainly. I mean, that's just a start, right? Now, if I'm talking about doing stuff in low gravity, which I am, because, again, this allows our little objects to be very light, and therefore you don't need to process that much material to make one. I mean, for example, the solar cells, I mean, you'll need something a little for stiffening, but the solar cells themselves could be like 10 or 20 microns thick. That's enough to absorb most of the sunlight. They don't have to be thick. In every part of this design, you want to make it as, you know, far lighter than anything you've ever seen. Again, because it only has to stand up to 1/100th or 1/1000th of a gravity. But most of the material of the solar system is in places with more gravity than that, but there's a fair amount that is available and, you know, with low gravity. And that means asteroids mostly. We could think about what happens after you've eaten all of those. By the way, I once discussed this with a guy who is an astronomer, and he said, well, yeah, that all makes sense, but I don't think you should consume all of the asteroids because we need to leave some for us to study.
Okay. We'll leave an asteroid zoo or something.
I think we negotiated something like a third. And I'm sure he'd hold me to it.
What about radiation, though? If we have equipment and chips, don't we have to make things thick to protect from the solar radiation that would mess up things?
Well, we're not doing it with planetary probes now.
We don't worry about radiation hurting the
computers? We worry about it, but it's sort of funny. I mean, the way semiconductor technology has gone, I mean, increasingly probes, you know, and the radiation is a problem anytime you're in space. I mean, it's more of a problem if you're like going through the Van Allen belts of Jupiter or the Earth or something, but everywhere there's lots more than there is on the ground on Earth. But when we send a probe to Pluto, yeah, we have to think about it, but you do notice it still works. We have probes that have worked for 30 years.
I assume that the probes are pretty heavy. I assume some of that was like...
They're not that heavy. I mean, they might be 100 pounds.
Okay.
But one of the technology trends that favors, and I think it's sort of a coincidence, is increasingly people put up small satellites that tend to... Their electronics is basically using cell phone technology. This is true to some extent of all the stuff from... whatchamacallit, Musk, big satellite network. And also other people, countries that maybe don't have our resources, they tend to put up small satellites. They call them CubeSats, and the electronics is basically a cell phone. And the funny thing is, cell phone electronics, stands up pretty well to radiation. We had to build special things to make them rad hard, but sort of accidentally, because I guarantee you, there wasn't a design requirement for the iPhone that it had to be rad hard. I mean, I would have put that in, but I'm a worrier. But they are fairly rad hard. They work pretty well. So when somebody puts up a CubeSat and it works, it doesn't have too much trouble with radiation. I mean, I think you have to think about it, but apparently, it doesn't get in their way very much.
So this is sort of kind of amazing. So a machine that we might be able to build in 5 or 10 years, very light, so it would be easy to transmit.
It would be a massive effort. The thing is, you need engineers from a lot of different areas to do stuff in preparing, preparing the substance of the asteroid and separating out. Yes.
By massive, is this something it would take the whole U.S. to devote, like the Manhattan Project, or massive, like what SpaceX is doing, where one company, where it Elon Musk?
I wouldn't sell Elon short, but I mean, this is not, he's not doing this. He's not doing anything real close to this. You need guys from a bunch of different more areas than most projects. It might be more like the Manhattan Project, but the Manhattan Project, for example, did not use most of, in the dollars of the time, which you probably want to multiply by 10 or 15 today, the Manhattan Project cost $2 billion. The amount of money the U.S. spent in World War II was more like $500 billion. There's lots of projects we spent more money than the Manhattan Project. It wasn't, the center. It wasn't that most people were working on the Manhattan Project. It was an interesting side project. And today, you probably could do better. I mean, we hopefully have, we're richer, we have a bigger population. We still have smart people, I think. And I can tell you, when I've talked to people about, would you be interested in such a project? Some said, when we get this to work, it will, once it starts replicating, imagine it has a replication period of a year. I mean, I would hope for better, but suppose something like that. And says, well, where are you after 20 years? I said, well, you're knee deep in them. I mean, 2 to the 20th, it's increased a million times, and it's just getting started.
Yeah.
So I have talked to a few people about this years ago, actually. And I said, well, which would be more exciting? Something like this, in which we end up completely, we end up intercepting most of the energy from the sun is available for our purposes. And we have made, let's say, the United States a type 2 Kardashev civilization, which could be useful, by the way.
So, Leah, I'll tell you,
a lot of people would think twice about with us if we could, vaporize their whole continent. At any rate, I found the people in different kinds of engineering, I said, isn't this almost as exciting as building an electric car? Or isn't this almost as exciting as using a internet browser to advertise, something to help keep somebody's erection up? I mean, isn't it almost as exciting as all the high tech things?
Let's talk about the practical location. So you said capturing the energy of the sun. So with that, we'd make a lot of them. And then presumably at some point we would say, stop just making copies of yourself. We've got a trillion of them. Start making
lots more than a trillion. But yes, the thing is, if you eat up most of the asteroids, the question is that enough to make something that is essentially a thin film? Most of this is just, solar cells, a thin film. And the last time I looked at it, it looked like it would work. Of course, by the way, if it's not, you could always, take Mercury apart or something, which, by the way, I think Mercury probably has more matter in it than all of the asteroid belt. Asteroid belt, it was 1/200th of Earth or something like that. It's not, a lot. I mean, it's not a lot compared to a planet.
But I mean, what do we do? We have all of these solar cells in space, then we just like beam the energy down to Earth.
Well, I kind of think that taking most of the energy in the sun and beaming it down to Earth could be a mistake. How about a little bit of it? Like, you know, useful number. The amount, all right, the amount of light that falls on the Earth is far more than we use in, you know, if we converted it completely, it's far more than we use in industry. Okay. Although we're using it for something where it's keeping us warm, right? But, and of course, you know, plants use it and so forth. But the amount produced by the sun is approximately 2 billion times more than the amount that falls on the Earth. The Earth only intercepts a small fraction. So by the way, one practical thing, when you build this cloud of objects with solar cells that are absorbing light from the sun, its radius should be greater than the Earth. We don't want it to be in close where so that we don't get any light anymore. That would probably be a mistake. Yeah, you could do a lot of things with it.
What else besides getting energy? What else could we do that's practical?
Well, if these things can build themselves, you're not far from being able to build other things. So, you know, certainly, I mean, wouldn't you like to be able to give a little kid a billion toys for Christmas? Maybe not, because, you know, you're always stepping on them as it is. And it would be even worse if there were a billion of them.
But, I mean, I guess we could build giant space stations that could literally house everyone from Earth. We'd still have to get the people to space, but it'd be fairly easy.
Well, you know, one of the funny things about this is, you see, I don't see any technological questions that we don't basically know how to address on this. But there are technological questions that we wish we could that I don't know how to do, and this wouldn't really tell me. So, for example, if you were living in some sort of space environment, we don't have really good solutions, maybe if we rotated it. But we don't know how to make artificial gravity. By the way, another small side project you might want to do with these would be to terraform Venus and Mars quickly.
That, yeah.
Well, I mean, Venus has too much atmosphere. Mars mm-hmm. doesn't have enough. Venus has too much light. It would need some shades or mirrors to decrease the amount of light falling on it, whereas Mars would need more. But if you have these sort of resources, it's all doable. Of course, another thing they both need is more water, but you probably just take apart one of the ice moons of Jupiter or Saturn.
I've read it might be easiest to terraform the moon because there's no...
You can do that.
The whole but, you the know, water will escape eventually, but you know we'll have it.
The atmosphere is the biggest problem. Well, yeah. I mean they both are because, but I seem to remember the half life of an Earth type atmosphere on the Moon is about 500,000 years. So, but it's no worse than people who build subdivisions in dry riverbeds in Southern California. I'd say, you know, 500,000 years. Yeah, you know nothing lasts forever. But
I imagine. Another benefit would be asteroid mining. I mean, we could eventually we'll put it together, make giant ships or something, and we can mine stuff from asteroids and figure out a way of getting it
down
to Earth.
This is asteroid mining. We're taking the asteroids apart and putting it and making it programmable matter. Okay. Mm-hmm. You could do all sorts of ridiculous things with this because you have, you know, energy available that's many, you know, like billions of times more than billions, trillions of times more than we have had available to humans before. Now, by the way, this also means you should be careful with it because even reasonable mistakes would probably kill us all.
What about making a particle accelerator like bigger than all of Earth? We could do that. That must probably be useful.
I'm sure we could sell it. That's how we get the particle physicist to work on it. Says, yeah, as soon as we get this done, we're going to build a much bigger particle accelerator because, after all, what else could anybody want other than a big particle accelerator? But, yeah, you could. You could also build things like extremely large, you know, what they call a distributed telescope with a number of different mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have something. Let's suppose that its effective aperture size is like you know, the size of the Earth's orbit, the things you can see in vacuum are related to how wide your aperture is. I mean, the size of the things you can see. So you could probably end up, seeing if there were habitable planets of Alpha, and the locals happened to look a lot like humans, and one of them was skinny dipping. You could watch her.
Wait, literally?
Yeah.
I mean, we could literally see people on another planet. We could see them.
Sure, why not? I mean, it's lambda over d is gives you the angular resolution. Now then you multiply by the distance. I mean, actually, I don't remember if you could actually, see if she had a nose ring or whatever. I do think you could at least see highways and cars and things.
And of what distance? How many light years? I
Well, that's
mean,
only four.
okay.
But and unfortunately, if there were decent planets, I think we would already around Alpha Centauri A, B, or Proxima. I think we would already know, and I think there aren't. It's too bad. I mean, they are close. Going there is actually only really hard, as opposed to, horrible. I mean, like it might take 100 years. By the way, you could also use these lasers to boost probes to other places.
Oh, yeah.
So they, but you know, the best you end up getting something that's a fairly high fraction of the speed of light. We don't know how to do any better. But yeah, you could probably do that. With light sails and a laser driving it,
Well,
or
that's ideally where the particle accelerator would come in. It would teach us more about physics and let us find loopholes in the speed of light limit.
if there are any, and if there are any that don't accidentally, destroy the entire space-time continuum, because you want to avoid that.
This would have an interesting effect on the military balance of power. As you said before, if the US started having,
Well,
or Spain, imagine Elon Musk.
I worry occasionally about this. I think we could call it a neoliberal idea where we would partially deindustrialize the United States and it would all go to China and that would make them like us. I think everything happened except the last part. There were people who said, well, if they're richer, they will become democratic, and that doesn't seem to have happened. I never thought it would. I've been thinking about this a long time. Not that anybody listens to me, but except you people listening to me, obviously you do listen to me, but not in a way that you jump up and do everything I say. Or do you? At any rate, the I thought we would have trouble, or we might have trouble with China if they were in the mood. And I kind of think we're getting closer to have, I mean, we have to worry about it at this point. In some areas, they have a lot more industrial capacity than we do. Not everything, but a lot of things.
Change that, or if China did it, it would change. They would.
Well, that's one way to get this done. I would say, and I might be wrong, no country is, all right, first, I'm confident nobody's trying. I mean, I know there are people who have thought about it and even done some thought into some of the engineering details. There was a guy I met, became a friend, who used to be up at Los Alamos, named Klaus Lochner, who was originally from Germany, an ex-particle physicist. And and his attitude was, well, obviously this could work. We just have to do the engineering, and here, let's do some of it to show you. But I think it's very difficult to get people to take the idea seriously, and partly because they say, well, it can't be true if the implications are so big it can't be true. Which I said, as I said, lots of people would say if you had a new virus, it's not like it could spread till it hit hundreds of millions of people. I said, yes, it is.
Well, I wonder if AI is going to change people's views. I mean, an AI of superhuman intelligence would be a bigger deal than this. So if people accept we're going to
Would it?
have that in 20 years, then
I'm not sure it would. I mean, let's suppose it was also smart, and then we vaporized it. What would it do? I mean, people are pretty smart compared to lions, but if you like foolishly step out of your vehicle in Kruger Park and try to, pat the lion on the head, he could still eat you. I'm not sure it would be. It might be. Of course, the other thing is I don't see any sign. I mean, in things like, coming up with better chess and stuff, they could beat humans. But I haven't seen them do anything terribly interesting yet. Maybe they will. I mean, what I've seen recently is saying we can make ideologically idiot, basically somebody who's fairly good at denying obvious things. I said, well, that's there's no payoff to that. And most and the other thing is there may be other problems that may limit this, but we don't know yet. I mean, in science fiction, my favorite, well, one of my favorite ones was it was possible to build a machine smarter than human, but if it ran very long, it would like go insane. And the smarter you build it, the quicker it went insane. Now, this was for plot purposes so that computers don't rule the world in this universe, but we don't, I mean, they're not acting terribly stable right now. I don't have a feel for it. I don't know.
Well, that's a very, very different topic. But of course, AI could help us build these self-replicating machines. That's
It
one of the
might, although you don't really need it. I mean, oh, by the way, there has been pro there are interesting problems in doing this that on which there has been progress. Most people have not even heard of the problem in the first place, and we could just, skip it, but I don't want to. So one of the problems that people used to talk about with this building this sort of thing is said, well, I have to build this object and I use these tools to do it. And then I have to think of all the tools that are used to make those tools, and then the tools that are used to make those tools. And if you're not careful, you have to replicate the entire industrial system of the United States and maybe three or four other countries as well in order to make a pencil or something.
Right.
And this was called a closure. Like, it's hard to get closure. It's hard to get, a finite set of things which makes all those things. But it's obviously possible because, I mean, algae does it, right?
Yeah.
Fleas
Speaking
do
of
it.
that, that's just one of the reasons I believe that AI is going to be superhuman is that John von Neumann basically had superhuman intelligence and he existed. And again, the existence of algae sort of is strong evidence that you can make self-replicating things. And
But there are practical things that have already happened that look very useful in addressing this problem. And the main one is 3D printers. The 3D printer is something where you have a particular tool, and it can make many, 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 many different tools. All you have to do is store the right programs to do so. I mean, there have been other things that were moving in this direction, which we still use, like numerically controlled machine tools, which can, make many different things, but this is more flexible. So something somewhat like a 3D printer would probably be part of the thing I'm imagining. But it would make lots and lots of different parts. I remember asking, of course, I remember somebody saying, well, you could never make a, every now and then I would have somebody would say, well, you could never get a 3D printer to make X. I think one was an electric motor. And since at the time I used this clever trick of doing a search on the internet, and a minute later I said, oh yeah, somebody just on this particular there are projects for people to make homebrew 3D printers and of increasing sophistication and so forth. And one of the things they had just done was make an electric motor. I mean, it's always good to get in an argument with somebody about something, whether something is possible when you know it has already happened. That's often the case. And of course, one of the things is if you were designing this, you'll be looking for simplicity of manufacture in some ways. I mean, there might be some things that you could get higher performance if you built something in a complicated way that was hard to replicate, with the tools we have connected with this self-replicating machine. And so you do it another way. It doesn't have to be perfect. It just like if you have it can make itself, and there's all sorts of things you might want to improve. The other thing is like let's suppose it starts working. We find out, this thing would go faster if we change the pro. Can we change the software? The answer is sure. Why not? We'll be monitoring it while it's playing around on some asteroid, and we find, oh, here's something that'll speed it up 15%. That's how we'll change the program. And in fact, after a while, you might end up building things that are, that are more specialized and also sturdier in some cases. Like, you want to build something that you're going to use on Earth, you won't build it the same way. Like, these things are gossamer. They're, you know, the stuff holding things together is sort of like spider webs. You know, they're very light. But if we said we thought we'd build a billion refrigerators and drop them on India or something like that, we could, right? And they'd have to be, you know, sort of more similar to ordinary refrigerators. They'd have to be sturdy. So, but you could do that. I mean, you would eventually want to have different versions of them. But at the beginning, you want some a single thing that can replicate itself in at least a moderately wide, like it could work on at least different asteroids. It isn't, it's not going to work on just one, probably.
It couldn't just have the same exact same blueprint with the same material. You'd want it to have some
I
flexibility.
mean, ultimately, you could do many things with it, but in the beginning, the whole thing is to get it to work at all and get it to replicate rapidly and then let it rip. And then your capabilities are increasing very rapidly. Also, let us suppose that AI takes some computing, which it does. Okay. And even though I would guess, barring some technical innovation that I haven't heard of, that these things will have chips in them that are simpler than cutting edge chips today. But if you have, let's say, 10 to the 20th of them, that's actually potential. And also, you've moved these things into sort of a tight, just they're all in a fairly small region so that you don't have really bad speed of light lags with the communications going back and forth. You could probably have a pretty powerful computer. I mean, if you know, like each thing is no more complicated than an old 386 or something, but there are 10 to the 20th of them. Yeah, you might actually have more capability than the current machines built in Silicon Valley, but only by billions of times, the or trillions or whatever. So there's a lot of interesting possibilities. But now I could tell you one possible way to get it built, although it's kind of risky and it would involve lying, which is a sin. You see, but I've seen it work before. Like, there were people working on, let's call it early AI, where they were talking about not learning networks, but you know, building a bunch of rules into something. You know, we'll call it the AI of the 80s. And they managed to convince, as far as I could tell, people working in that field managed to convince Japan that DARPA was working on it, and they convinced DARPA that Japan was working on it. And each of them got a fair sized pot of money. Let's call it $1 billion. And they did a bunch of stuff, but it wasn't terribly useful either. I mean, the bureaucratic conniving they made work, but not the project. But let's suppose we started building such a thing. The United States is capable of it, I think. I mean, I could, who else could? If the EU had a joint project, they could do it. Could Russia do it? Probably not. But could China do it?
This seems like something that it might fit Trump's personality to support. You could imagine
Well, you can think of him as a huge
a
20-sided die, and who knows what would happen. I mean,
well,
like,
yeah.
well, the thing is, Trump has opinions on things that you would not suspect. I mean, for all I know, he has, like, do you remember there was once at the end of the Cold War, and you may not remember this, but there was a scheme to put a bunch of missiles somewhere in Nevada, you know, missile silos. And the idea was it would be hard for somebody else to destroy them in a first strike because they were close enough together that when you hit one with a missile coming in for it was called dense pack.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, well, Trump had opinions about dense pack. I don't know why, but like he was interviewed, was talking about dense pack sometime back at the time. I mean, who knows? But has is Trump running on a campaign of making America great again by turning it into a Kardashev two civilization? And I say, not yet.
Yeah. I mean, why did it take over? Greenland, right? That was a brief skiing that we.
He's not the first person who ever suggested that. We offered to buy Greenland. But by the way, you get a weird perspective on these things if you actually like know what's happened in the past. We offered to buy Greenland in 47 after World War II, and partly because people were aware that great circle routes for bombers and things tended to go over the North Pole to get to the United States. The same, you've heard of the Dew Line. Distant early warning was a bunch of radar stations in Canada. We thought a lot about the North in those days, and we actually have a base in northern Greenland called at Thule. And we've talked about even screwier things. If you want to read about Project Iceworm and how we're going to put all sorts of tunnels in the ice and have be moving ICBMs around under the ice, for which the International Geophysical Year of 1958 was the cover. But we offered, and the Dane says, nah. And we said, okay. That's what Trump did. He said, although I'll tell you, if he gets the chance and he does it again, they'd be fools not to go for it. I mean, the thing is, in the past, they were definitely a Danish territory. Today, they're really kind of independent. So if I was offering to buy Greenland, I would say, all of you get to move to Florida and have a condo. All there aren't very many people in Greenland. You can afford it. It's six only 60,000 people. And then if you have uses for Greenland, you've got it. But like when you start talking about other projects compared to this project of building and letting rip a self-replicating machine, the phrase you need to use over and over is nothing as trivial as that, which I'm stealing. That's from the old the story by Arthur C. Clarke, The 9 Million Names of God. They're asking, so what will happen when we're done? Will it be the end of the universe? And then the Tibetan monk said, nothing as trivial as that. So yeah, it would be a big thing.
And you
But
think, I
yes.
mean, so Trump somehow is listening to this and he's like, yes, I'm all in. He wins. And this is like the key issue. You think like
Well
by
then,
the time for we could have this launched within 4 years if we devote a lot of effort to it. That's plausible.
we could get a start. I doubt if you could get done in 4 years. There's a lot of engineering to do, and there's a lot of testing because you're going to be wrong about some of your ideas. But there's lots of ways to test. One way to test if you're in a hurry is certain things, not the final version. Certain things can be tested on the moon. I mean, simply because it's close and you have mineral resources and a vacuum. I mean, the moon is not terrible. I mean, the bad thing about the moon is it's high gravity. It's a full sixth of, you don't want that, but you could test anything. Like, suppose you're saying we're working on an industrial process to take sort of generic rock and extract aluminum from it. Okay. Oh, by the way, there might well be things where if we had infinite resources and we were building it at home, we would build stuff with copper, but copper is scarcer than aluminum, and aluminum can be used for electrical wires and things. Lots of things that you prefer, like the thing is, use something common and easier to make, substitute. As long as it make, as long as the thing still works, and as long as it reduces the replication time, substitution is a good thing to do. But I have not really worried a whole lot about what happens when Trump decides to go for broke on I don't actually think it's terribly likely, but who can say? It would be interesting. I'll d definitely tell you that. Now, if we started building it, or if anybody started building it, as I said, I see about three players. By the way, that might change with time. I think it's getting easier. As you know, there's technology developing that sort of by accident favors it. I would say, like one of the things is 3D printing, which is, advancing. And to the extent it advances, some parts of this become simpler.
Well, also, I imagine, I mean, AI, they're getting good at material science. So I
it might
imagine
help. It might help.
they
Maybe you
can say
can
that's the.
do designs faster.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't think it would take forever to build it. And remember, you get to test things. You get to I mean, some things, if you just say, how do things work in a vacuum, you just have a big box of vacuum and you're trying different things on. I mean,
Or
we even have meteoric rocks. Some meteorites are from the asteroids. We don't have just that recent sample, which is like 100 grams. There are meteoric rocks that weigh 60 tons that we know where they are. There was a meteor again back in Greenland. Apparently Greenland is crucial for some reason here. There was a nickel iron meteorite that landed in northern Greenland, and Eskimos made tools out of it. So they had, they were sort of had an anomalous iron age where they didn't know how to make iron, but they just found a big chunk of it, and they would, hack pieces off to it and beat it into shapes that were useful. So there were Eskimos, a few hundred years ago, who were making nickel iron tool, and they're easy to recognize because it's not exactly the mix that you make in a normal steel or anything. It's has a lot of nickel in it and a bit of heavier platinum group elements.
And we could take some of these asteroids on Earth and we could put them in orbit. And then that's where we could experiment, right? Then we'd have
You
everything.
don't need anything that big for experiment. I mean, for experiments, you need, a piece of rock, the weight of a human being or something. You don't need
But we could
to.
take part of then we take part of an asteroid, we put it in orbit, and then that's where we could test our machines. That has everything.
Well, if you were trying to go to the super low gravity Gossamer type design, yes, that part you could test. But there's many, many other sub tasks that are, like you're saying, we're trying some chemical extraction process, et cetera. Those you don't need to duplicate the low gravity. So, yeah, there's lots of things you'd be doing. But I think people would, I said, like, is it more exciting than an electric car? I said, well, we were building electric cars in 1908. Whenever I hear people said, wow, by the way, I think Musk is a good engineer and has done some interesting, and a good manager, and he's done some interesting things. But, and like, the improved rocketry, everybody who's been interested in rocketry have been known that there was room for lots of improvement for many years. All sorts of schemes that everybody knew would work if you ever got, if you ever put the money into doing them, they knew that pretty big improvements were possible, particularly if you could somehow get it away from NASA. And he's doing those things, and they're great, but they're factors of three or four. You can lift more, but not a million times more. You can lift more cheaply, but not a million. The numbers involved are more like three than a million. But for self-replicating machines let loose in the solar system, a million is way too small a number to consider. It's much more than that. So yeah, is it? Yes.
If there weren't national security issues, I wonder if we could do an open source project where.
There are some parts of this where people have done things like this. Again, there are open source things and people talking about different kinds of 3D printers. Could we? Of course, by the way, in your ideal, in a world that is stupid in exactly the right way, you never do convince any of the powers that be that this is worth doing, while at the same time, technology moves in a direction that's making it simpler until finally an open source project does do it. And then, of course, but I could be wrong, and I haven't worked a lot. I mean, I've observed open source projects, but I have not been involved in one. But I have this theory that if they had un if whoever was the guy who was the key coordinator of the project, the Linus Torvald of this open source project, it's entirely possible that being having superhuman power and having able to do virtually anything and millions of times more powerful than the rest of the earth, it could go to his head. I mean, he might not act like Linus Torvald anymore. He might act more like, Cyrus or maybe just Augustus. Augustus was sort of okay. But yeah, anyhow, you see what I'm saying. And have I seen ideas like this in science fiction? Yeah, once or twice. But people don't, I mean, people seem to like, by the way, the molecular scale replicators better because then everything turns into gray goo. And I, for some reason, that seems attractive to people. I mean, at least as a story topic, I've certainly read it a number of times. But this is more like, think of it as an unlimited number. Well, no, not unlimited, but very large numbers of small, slightly useful gadgets. But they become perhaps more than slightly useful if you have quadrillions of them, or more than quadrillions. I mean, there aren't, we don't really have commonly used words for a lot of these magnitudes. I mean, I mean, it's possible to get something that's on the order of a mole of them. So one thing that, by the way, I like about the Linus Torvald as God Emperor of the Universe, I mean, or somebody like him, is that they say, yeah, let's take Mercury apart and use it. And I mean, there'll be all sorts of people who said, well, but what about all the life on Mercury that this will? I said, well, there isn't any life on Mercury. Well, how do you know? I said, and then I would say, you're an idiot. And then hopefully our leader will say, depart, let's do something useful with it. Although, he might have a, the point is you would be able to do fairly eccentric projects if you had a particular person who had all the key command codes. There was a series of science fiction, a couple of books. I had hoped for more, but I don't think they sold too well. By Steve Sterling, and in this one, it's an alternate history where the solar system is the way people used to think it was in 50 science fiction novels. So there is an intelligent, near human but slowly dying civilization on Mars, which has canals and is dry. Venus has dinosaurs and jungle princesses and other good things. He didn't, now because I think the series didn't continue, but logically it should also have had that Mars, excuse me, that Mercury was fa had one side always facing the sun, which is what we used to believe, but wasn't true. Mercury actually rotates three times in 2 Mercury years, does not have the same side always facing the sun, but we could make it have the same size facing the sun. There. Now the hardest one, and if we're trying to make science fiction true, like I could see how we could terraform Venus and Mars. I can see how we could create a Mercury that always faces the same way, which by the way has the tremendous benefit that there is an area, along the let's call it the equator, that is, not super hot, not super cold. The most valuable thing we could possibly we create the Twilight Zone. Okay, but the other thing that was in some of those stories, like if you count Edgar Rice Burroughs, we have to make a huge, underground a world, Pellucidar, and I think that's hard. I don't know how to do it. It really doesn't make any sense at all. It's although it's great fun, what else? I think we have to get rid of the radiation belts around Jupiter, since people used to set various stories. I mean, they didn't pretend that the moons of Jupiter were habitable, but you could at least build things there. But as it is, it's difficult because there's lots and lots of radiation. The more modern stories about the moons of Jupiter, you have to be underground. But yes, if we're going to rebuild the solar system so that it's more like 50s science fiction, which is a very defensible goal. But the thing is, I don't think a government would do that. I don't have that much faith in government.
Oh.
I don't think they're creative enough to do that. Although they might possibly think, but we'd have people say, there are people who don't even want to build NWAPA. I mean, what do you do with people like that? Well, of course, what we would do is we would send them to the penal colonies on Venus, which would be habitable and a fairly nice and interesting place. But that I believe that was a typical place you had penal colonies was Venus.
Right. What
So
would be, but what would be the hardest part, do you think, about building these self-replicating things in space?
Working out, efficient small scale versions of all the industrial processes you'd need to prepare the different materials. But I don't think it's impossible. As long as you have energy coming in, you have in the form of electricity, you can generally do things with electricity. I mean, you can make steel with electricity. You could do also, you could heat things up. Another thing you might occasionally do is if you built a mirror, you could use sunlight to heat things to high temperatures. I mean, I saw something which I'm tempted to get one of, some ad. It was a little tiny, well, small, comparable with the size of your hand, but you could use it. It would focus, and you could use it as a fire starter on a sunny day. Kind of a nice thing to happen if you soon expect a civilization to disintegrate or something. And you never know, so it might be useful. But one of the interesting things about it is, let us suppose that you had a high quality mirror, and you built with your self-replicating machine, and it's using solar energy. What is the temperature it can reach at its focus? This is interesting. This is one of the places in where you actually it helps if you actually know some physics. Or I mean, by the way, the temperature is the same if we built this in the asteroid as if I had a high quality mirror on Earth. What is the temperature you can hope to attain if it was perfect?
I think you've explained this to me before. It's like the temperature of the sun or something.
Yeah, this temperature of the surface of the sun, right? You and I had people say, "Well, if you just build it bigger, won't it get hotter?" I said, "No, it won't. That's the limit. You can come close to that, but you can't get higher with just a mirror. But that's pretty high. There, I mean, for certain purposes, people have built large, high quality mirrors to make what they call a solar furnace, and there's useful things that are done with this occasionally when you want to get something up to a few thousand degrees. But you can do that. And that's a potential, it's an approach to some of the materials processing questions you might run into. I mean, I suppose we should write a program if these are taking apart the asteroid belt. If we find that one of the asteroids has drifted in from another solar system and has something genuinely interesting, like a fossil, which I think is extremely unlikely, but I think the idea of extrasolar things going through the solar system is, since we have now seen a couple of them, is a little more respectable than it was. And they're probably more common than we thought, since we've seen two in about 3 years. And occasionally, one of these things could get trapped and look like sort of an off-brand asteroid, perhaps. And so we might already have some, but no one knows that, but it's possible. I mean, you can do simulations of something like this careening through the solar system. And if it happens to have the right path, it could, typically involve gravitational interactions with Jupiter. It can get trapped in the solar system. It's not terribly likely, but it's possible. I mean, in the same way, you can have if you have something like a comet or an asteroid has the right interactions with Jupiter, it can get thrown out of the solar system as well. Although I don't know if we've actually seen that happen, but but we certainly simulated it. We know it could happen from the way the gravity works. But any rate, so like one of the background numbers that got me, I mean, I've thought about this off and on for a long time, but one of the numbers was I saw a number on the US Navy was a little concerned that the Chinese had more shipbuilding capacity than the United States. The United States doesn't have much of a merchant fleet. We have some shipyards, and they almost, as far as I know, almost all of them make military ships, and not, and we don't have that much capacity to build things per year. I mean, there have been times in the past where we did, but we haven't been spending money on that. So somebody said, so in terms of building shipping, I mean, I'm not saying that these Chinese yards are all specialized for building military things, but just in the total amount of shipping that they could build per year, the number was that they could build 232 times more than the United States. And I said, yeah, that maybe that's a bad thing. But yeah, if we have a working cloud of self-replicating machines that is orbiting the sun and absorbing most of its energy, or actually, no, not most, because I'm assuming these things are only 15% efficient. I mean, I'm assuming they're built with fairly simple semiconductor tech, solar cell technology, not magical future. When I think about these things, I said, what can you do with things we know how to do right now? No new physics and not much new technology. Okay, so it'd probably only be 10% of the total energy of the sun. But, you know, that's good enough for government work.
Yeah.
So, you could do some interesting things. By the way, of course, the next background question is, how come we don't see any sign that anybody else has ever done this? I don't mean other humans, although right. That would be, that's what destroyed Atlantis. But other areas in the universe. And I don't think we've seen anything that suggests that there's self-replicating things, wildly remodeling things and doing interesting big things.
That leads to a potential danger that if there are aliens near us, they have a preference for the universe staying in its natural state, and they'll get very angry at us for trying to.
So they're kind of a nature conservancy or something.
Yes.
What you do is, remember this mirror I was talking about that's, a distributed mirror? But it's large. You can do what you can see, you could also shoot a beam at them that has that kind of resolution. So a friend once, when we were talking about this a long time ago, once pointed out, you could use this to burn up any Earth-sized planet like one per second out to maybe 150 million light years. So, that was if they tried to cause us any trouble. Of course, we wouldn't really know. We would just say that planet looks like it might be habitable. You never know. Might cause trouble. Better boil the oceans.
Well, let's hope that's not a value shared in our galaxy.
It's better to be careful. It's better to prevent trouble, right? I think it's interesting. Now, of course, there is another thing to think about, although this is something that has a solution. You realize this is a kind of life, a new kind of life we've created.
Yeah.
Now, what is the difference between, why is it not life? I said, well, there is no reason. It is. It can replicate itself. It can use materials and exterior energy sources to make more copies of itself. In principle, it could mutate, but if we're careful, we could avoid that. You can always have a bit flipped from a cosmic ray or something, but yeah, there are ways to make that have vanishing low probability with error correcting codes. But if you didn't, you could have, they could evolve, and probably we don't want that. By the way, I have seen a decent science fiction story. See, the thing is, like here is the first version of this that I think was, I mean, look, von Neumann talked about it. Okay, he talked about von Neumann machines, and there was two senses. Sometimes people talk about sort of a standard computer design, but he also was talked about self-replicating machines. But somebody was inspired by this and wrote an article which was in Scientific American in the late 50s, like 58 or so. Mm-hmm. And what these were sort of things that floated around in the ocean. They had solar cells, and they gradually absorb minerals dissolved in the water, and then they were programmed to come back to you, and they give you little globules of magnesium or whatever. But they were self-replicating. So, you could get a lot of it. So they'd be scattered as many as you wanted, scattered over the ocean. So that is the first, unless we start counting the brooms in the Sorcerer's Apprentice, they started replicating, and that led to trouble, as I remember, in the Disney cartoon. But people generally, they don't believe it. I mean, try it. Some people will believe it, but the sort of person who, for example, signs your checks probably won't. I mean, I've talked, I think that was one of the reasons that Klaus Lochner went on to do other things, because he couldn't get anybody interested. maybe I'm wrong. He would know this better than me. I tried a little and I couldn't get anybody interested. You know, this was, you know, 20 years ago or something.
Maybe the reach someone that has some influence and it changes things.
They don't believe it. You know, there have been other interesting examples of, you know, I don't believe because it is too big. That's, I mean, I'm trying to come up with an efficient phrase for this, but there was a fairly important Navy admiral, a guy named Leahy, who said, you know, sure, you can talk about how one atom of uranium releases two neutrons, and then we get two atoms of uranium and then four, but that can't really happen. By the way, that was his whole reason. He said, you're saying you could blow a whole city off the face of the earth. That can't really happen. And he said this, and he had some influence, but, you know, not enough to stop the Manhattan Project. And by the way, he changed his mind after the first test.
Okay.
Well, but I mean, I could find all sorts of people today in universities who would not be convinced if by the test. I mean, let's suppose we have built one of these things and it is successfully made a second copy. And while sitting on some asteroid, okay, and suppose it took a month to do it, right. You know, which is an excellent replication time. All right, just ask yourself what people would immediately, you know, their eyes would be wide open and they say, "Jesus Christ!" Okay, some people, but not most people, and not. I mean, how many people in who are in Congress would do that? I can't think of one, maybe one. All right. How many, if I held their hand and tell them, I said, oh, it might be three. I don't think it's, I mean, look, with epidemics, at least they've happened before. And even then it was hard to get people to believe in it. I mean, it was history, you know, it has happened over and over, yeah. Significant ones, sometimes worldwide. But you know, it was hard to get people to, do you remember, I remember having a conversation about that and said, but if that were really true, surely the stock market would already have figured that out. And I laughed at you.
Yeah.
Oh, but there is a way around it, which is, see, you don't really have to understand things. Sometimes you can have a fad. It doesn't have to, it may make sense, it may not, but it doesn't really matter. It's not the argument that's driving people. It's the fact that everybody else is doing it. So, all right, like, well, here's a question. Could we convince Peter Thiel of this? Probably yes.
Yeah.
And then could he maybe get a wave going in the financial world? I said, not perhaps, I don't know. But yeah, he'd probably understand it. There's probably a few other guys there who would.
Well, I'm sure Elon Musk would understand this.
Oh, yeah. And he'd probably figure a way to kick us off the project and take over. If there was such a project, what?
He should. I mean, he'd be better at running it.
It could. Yeah, but you know, I'd like to say, I don't think he's as crazy as I am. I just like to say that. I'm willing to put it on the table. I think I'm crazier than he is, and I think for this project, that might be what you need.
All right.
I mean, not to run it, but at least to have something useful, you know, to contribute to it. But I think it's interesting. I mean, you know, there are other things like that that's very hard to get people to believe, even though, you know, like if you said in principle, we could indefinitely extend the human lifespan. It's easy to make a logical argument why that's true. I mean, I could tell you the thermodynamics. You can decrease entropy with enthalpy. There, that's it. The rest is engineering details. But most people don't believe it, and you can't get them to believe it.
Yeah.
Now, but on the other hand, what, 2-3 years ago, some people in Silicon Valley who had, I mean, they have some sense, but they have far more money, actually tried putting some money into it. We'll see if they get anywhere. Altos Labs. I mean, there were some of those guys who said, well, why isn't it possible? And the answer is it is. It's probably just a very difficult engineering project. You know, there's all kinds of things like that. Do you remember there was a long period in which everybody knew that Donald Trump could not be elected president?
Yep.
But that continued during times in which he was effortlessly winning Republican primaries.
Yeah.
They said, but he won't really become president. I said, well, if he gets nominated, he might. People say, because it's unprecedented, and I don't think I like the consequences. That keeps things from happening, but it really doesn't.
Well, that's my argument for why I think we're, I mean, I think we are going to get smarter than human AI relatively soon, and people are very resistant to thinking about that. That might change, though, because we're actually talking with our AIs.
Well, that's apparently designed to drive them stupid. We'll see how that goes. But this one is interesting. And also, you know, like what it like us, we might need this. It could be, you know, with all its risk, it might be less risky than doing. Or what if there was some sort of cosmic disaster we saw coming? This is the sort of thing that might help us have enough resources to withstand it. I mean, it depends on the kind of disaster, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. We could spread out. That'd be the easiest way of getting a whole bunch of people off of Earth is to make a lot of the solar system habitable.
We just move the Earth. Come on. I mean, I'm used to it. I'm lazy.
If we could move the Earth, could we move another planet into a better orbit for habitation?
It's actually harder than you think. By the way, no, not impossible, but the amount of energy involved in moving an Earth-sized planet, I think it's, now, I could be wrong. I'm trying to remember a calculation I did probably 25 years ago, but it's much more energy than doing things like terraforming a world, making it habitable. Like, if you're trying to, and I seem to remember it might have taken a couple of years or more of the total energy from the sun. Okay, I may be wrong about that. It's something like that. It's like, again, I'd have to check, but I guarantee you it's a whole lot more. If you're trying to make Venus habitable, you need to strip off most of the atmosphere. But again, the atmosphere is a very small fraction of the mass of a planet.
Yeah.
And then you need to put things in orbit around it that shield it from too much sunlight. And then you need to transfer a lot of water from somewhere, which would probably be ice moons. But all of that is still a very small fraction. You know, the oceans are also a small fraction of the mass of a planet. So the total amount of energy you need for doing all this stuff is tiny compared with changing a planet's orbit. But I mean, I'm not saying you couldn't do it, but it might take, you know, 20 years. I don't have that kind of patience. If you want to terraform, it's ideal. The one thing about terraforming, if you're not careful, you know, like it's hard to think of a way to drop all... to do all this without a lot of waste heat that leaves Venus red hot, particularly since it's already red hot in the first place, which might take a time to cool off even after you've done everything you want to do. And that would make it take longer. But we might have to build giant radiator fins or something. But anyhow, I like terraforming Venus and Mars better than I like the moon, even though I have some, I don't hate that idea. Problem is, I don't know how to make extra gravity. Well, like on Venus, I feel pretty gravity is 90% of Earth. I think we would probably be all right if we fixed all the other horrible problems. I'm not absolutely confident that people could be healthy on Mars, where it's about a little under 40%. And I'm even less confident about the moon, and I'm far less confident about free fall. Although, you know, maybe you could spin your habitats, I guess.
Yeah, rotating space stations.
There are some things, the problems seem huge, but you can at least see ways to deal with them. But something as simple as, I don't think, you know, like astronauts, they get sick when they're in orbit for a long time. Lots of things are going wrong, and mostly it's the lack of gravity. I mean, there are actually other problems, like, if, you know, in a typical low Earth orbit thing or a longer one, you have to worry about radiation exposure. But if we were terraforming a planet, you wouldn't. There would be a thick enough atmosphere to protect you. Our atmosphere protects us mostly from the radiations that is fairly ubiquitous in space. We survive. There's some interesting things to be done. But the thing is, there are other things like this. Basically, anytime the importance gets too big, It's just impossible to convince. No, but I said, well, how would we convince? If we convince them the Chinese are already doing it, yeah, we'd probably go for it. Particularly if we could say, and they've already got halfway there or something like that. By the way, if somebody else built one, but it was a slow replicator, you might still beat them to the punch if you could, even somewhat later, you build a fast replicator. Like if they build something that takes 10 years, we build something that takes 6 months, we could deliver it late and still win the competition. Winning the competition means getting big and absorbing most of the energy from the sun.
Or being able to destroy the other person's replicators.
Well, you can do that early, but that's crude. Just be so overwhelmingly powerful that they act respectful. I would not be in favor of, you know, vaporizing them or, you know, although you could, but that would be wrong there. It's important that you make that point.
Yeah. So this has been interesting. So this is a huge thing that the U.S. could plausibly do in the next decade.
Well, I could be wrong. It may be that the engineering problems are harder than I think and would take 2 decades, but it's you know, basically doable.
They also could be easier, or people could have the solutions to the problems already, and it could be 5 years.
The one thing that I think makes that semi-plausible is, again, when I've talked to people about, you know, working on a project like that, it wasn't clear they would need to be paid. I mean, they're... When I talk to people about it, again, these are hardcore engineering physics type people. They said, that'd be never touched in my life. Actually cooler than an electric car. I mean, so much of what we do, even when people are excited about it, I said, it's really not that cosmic. But this is.
Oh, yeah. And just what it could give us. I mean, just the space telescopes and particle accelerators would do so much to advance our understanding of the universe. That if you're scientific minded, that would be reason enough.
There are just endless numbers of interesting things you could do. So I guess you would call me power hungry. I would like to have, you know, I mean, also think of it this way. You know, we are using less than 1/2 billionth of the sun's output. I mean, is that wasteful or what?
It is. Like leaving the lights on, you know.
Exactly. Nobody wants to do that, right? Oh, by the way, when we talk about important problems like global warming, you realize that you can solve with this sort of tool, you can, of course, solve it instantly.
Oh, yeah. You block out some of the sun hitting Earth.
Well, yeah, we could do that anyhow without doing this tool. It's not all that impossible to do, but most of the people interested in these questions for some philosophical reason are against what you might call geoengineering solutions, i.e. anything that would work. Speaking of which, have you ever noticed that there is a tendency when you close down an industry that spews a lot of carbon dioxide in Germany and the United States, that they open the same industry in China or India? Just saying. Do you ever hear, like, I mean, we'll have things in which say, oh, we're going to buy the state in New Mexico. Well, we're going to buy electric vehicles, which the electricity will be produced by elves, all the steel we need for it. Well, the Chinese will make that. I mean, and I've never even heard them mention the idea that heavy industry is moving to other places as opposed to disappearing. I guess that would take all the fun out of it. But all the stuff about, we have to make, you know, this state in the United States, if we just... Like if California just closes down all its steel mills, of course, California already did close down all its steel mills probably 40 years ago. But, you know, the world's making more steel than it did then and producing carbon dioxide in the whatever. I mean, I never see anybody talk about the worry that they're just moving things around.
Yeah.
Ever. Actually, no, I've seen it once or twice, but it's very rare. But we could build refrigerators, you know, using broadcast power. Oh, by the way, is it possible to take power generated in space and send it to the Earth and use it in a fairly useful way? The answer is yes, assuming that its original source out there is cheap. And this is. But the most effective ways I've known involve people, broadcasting it down to a earth receiver through microwaves. And it's about 50% efficient, so not bad. You can do it. Now, when people talked about building a solar power satellite and doing this, it had the flaw that it was ridiculously more expensive than anything else we do. I mean, it was a terrible way of making electricity. But if it's a self-reproducing satellite, now that's a different story, because you only have to pay for the first one. But
Yeah, so we can, this is a huge environmental angle for this too. So let's see if we can convince anyone with this podcast.
what a side bet. Well,
Well, I know, yeah, the odds are it won't work, but
look, I mean, if I lose, I'll still be all right with it. But yeah, I don't think we'll convince anybody. Actually, no. I think we actually will convince a few people, but we won't convince anyone who's the sort of person who has the right personality to have ever even wanted to be politically important. Because there's some deep gulf between those people and the interesting, crazy people.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this was an enjoyable conversation, and let's see where this goes. Hopefully, if you're listening, tweet about this or write about this, tell your powerful friends, and maybe, probably not, but maybe we can take over the solar system before AI exterminates us.
K2 by 2040.
Yep. All right. Nice talking with you, Greg.
Okay, bye.
Bye.